Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to have you in studio once again today and talking about something that you talk about quite a bit. You kind of throw in the word protection.
Right.
How what you do protects people. Let's get into the power of protection this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me start today's discussion with a biblical foundation, because this is the Legacy and Faith Show. So let's bring in the faith component here as our beginning point. So in 1 Corinthians 10:13, it says, "And no temptation has overtaken you except what is common to man. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, He will also provide a way out so that you can endure it." So when I was reading this scripture, what really jumped out at me is God's protection. Now, of course, we understand that God doesn't just jump into our lives off of osmosis. We need to invite Him in. We need to request Him to come in and protect us and be our shield. Mm. And so when we are connected with Him, He responds. And so there is a limiting factor here with temptation, but He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. To me, that sounds a lot like a protector.
Yeah.
So God is our protector. 2 Thessalonians 3:3 says, "But the Lord is faithful, and He will strengthen you and protect you from the evil one." So here it is. Now this one is much more in our face. Hmm. God is our protector. And then one of my favorite protection scriptures comes from 2 Samuel 22. Where David says, My God is my rock, in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation. He is my stronghold, my refuge, and my savior. From violent people, you save me. I called to the Lord." So there's our action again. "I called to the Lord, who is praiseworthy, and have been saved from my enemies." You know, everything that I want to be about is to reflect the very nature of God. So as we start talking about protection, how do we stand in the gap for our families? How do we emulate our good God in this quality and in this nature of being a protector? Well, now I want to shift into the estate planning discussion, which is the legacy aspect of our show. Mm. But the first foundation is that God is good. He is our shield, our strength, our protector. He shows up when we call upon His name. And so I want that to be our foundation. I want that to lead the discussion today, which is, as we talk about protection, why am I talking about protection? I'm talking about it because that's who God is in our lives. And therefore, I believe that it is a very strong value in most individuals' lives that we want to protect those that we love and that we care about. And it typically starts with family. So whether you have kids or whether you don't have children, those that are in your close proximity, those that you say, "I love that person," there is something innate in us, which is a God reflection, that says, "I want to protect." And so let's talk about protection today, shall we?
We shall. And you've got a number of questions written out here. We'll just kind of plug through these. And starting off with, can trusts protect all of your assets? And I assume you mean by assets, not just material things, but people, too, in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I hear this a lot. As a matter of fact, trusts have this ideology that if I throw everything in a trust, that somehow I'll be protected from my creditors, that somehow with a magic wand, a trust is going to work as a shield against any attack that we may have. So business owners often use trusts or LLCs, and we use them as a mechanism, as a legal mechanism, to set up some of those protections. But while a trust can protect, it does not protect in a way that most people believe. So the ideology that we can throw everything into a trust and therefore I'm protected is actually false. Okay. And so I want to dispel the initial myth that a trust is inherent with protections. There are certain categories, there are certain types of trust that we want to be able to look at. But as a starting premise, most trusts do a poor job of protecting the individual who created the trust. Now, they can protect other people, but they do a poor job of protecting you as the creator of the plan.
Now, why is that?
Well, because a majority of what we're doing in estate planning is we are using what's called a revocable living trust. So let's look at those three terms. The word revocable means that I have full power and control, so much power and control that I could take the document, put it through a shredder, and take all my assets, put them back in my name. So the word inherent of revocable means I have all power. As soon as we have power over an asset, then it is exposed to a majority of liabilities. So if I was going through a divorce and I had assets in my name, a judge would have authority over that asset to determine how that is split. If I cause a harm, if I run into somebody in a car and I don't have sufficient car insurance and I'm holding an asset in my name, then that asset could potentially be liable to make up for that harm. If I have a catastrophic health issue, injury or disease that I work through, well, that becomes a creditor on the back end. And someone can sue me. And what can they get? They can get something that's in my name. So the term revocable, even though an asset when we use a trust is not in my name anymore, it's actually in the name of my trust. But the way it's designed as a revocable living trust, the terminology is inherent with me controlling it. So therefore, even though it's not in my name, because it's under my control, it means that whatever, it's still in my hands. And if something is in my hands, it's available to be picked off by multiple different circumstances, creditors, and incidences in my life. So how do we protect against those things? Well, we'll get into a little bit of that. But the easiest, most readily available protection is called insurance. And we have it. So when I develop an estate plan and we use the tool of a trust, because we can use the tool of a will. So we have wills and we have trusts. So in simplicity, those are the two tools I can use. But when we use a trust and we put assets into the trust, I don't have my clients cancel their car insurance. Why? Well, because they're still potential liability should something go wrong that day, right? And so as a matter of fact, I often and almost always encourage my clients to have what's called an umbrella policy. Now, I don't get paid a penny. I have sold millions of dollars worth of umbrella policies, and I've never reaped one single benefit other than this, that my clients are better taken care of. So our first line of defense in anything we do, even in business, is not a structure of a document. It is actually insurance in our life. And so you need to talk to whoever manages your car insurance. Talk to them about what does it look like to have $1 million umbrella policy or a $2 million umbrella policy. I would suggest that any assets that are liquid and available in your life, so your home is not liquid. It's very difficult. It takes a time, although in this great market, you could sell it rather quickly. But that is not liquid. You can't write a check and have your house available. So it's also there's also inherent creditor protections in our primary house. So that would not count. But whatever is liquid in your life, my highest suggestion is that you have an umbrella policy that matches that value. So if you have $1 million of assets, not counting your house, then you should have $1 million. Umbrella policy. So we cannot use a revocable living trust and protect a client simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Those are incompatible theories. And that's why the first question is, or the first response I had is, no, a trust really doesn't protect you, because a majority of trusts that we use are revocable living trusts for estate planning purposes. They set up protections for those that you love, but they do not protect you during your lifetime.
Okay, well, maybe that moves us on to our next question then there. What's a domestic asset trust, and is it available in Washington State?
Yeah, so many states are now going on a route of allowing their citizens. So when I say citizens, I mean a state citizen, not a U.S. citizen, because that's under federal law. So estate planning is governed by state statutes, not federal. So therefore, each state has the ability to pass its own laws and pass its own estate planning rules. And so many states are now utilizing a domestic asset trust. And what that is that it's a trust where you actually can put your assets into a specifically designed trust. And the assets that go into that trust will be protected from creditors. Now, most statutes that are being developed in this area do not allow you to put assets into a domestic asset trust when you already have creditors. So if you're already marching towards bankruptcy, if you've already had the car accident, now trying to flip the switch to protect against a known creditor is not possible. It is a protective trust, and it's typically only available in that state. So Washington does not have a statute for a domestic asset trust. So therefore, they're also known as a self-settling trust. In other words, I have settled it. I have created it. So in Washington, there is no such thing as a domestic asset trust. Now, in other states, you could go to another state and actually create a domestic asset trust. Utah was one of the first ones to actually lead the way in developing this, as well as Nevada. Now other states like Michigan, which I'm actually licensed in, and multiple other states have begun to create these domestic asset trusts.
You have to move there, physically move there to get those?
No, you don't. Okay. You can create one. However, here's the caveat, is that there was a case law that an Illinois creditor was suing a Nevada individual, and the individual had started a domestic asset trust in Nevada. But the Illinois court said that trust is only good for its citizens and it will only protect against the creditors from that state. So it has its limitations. So in other words, the Illinois court allowed its creditor to go ahead and invade the Nevada asset trust. So there are limitations in most theories right now, and this is relatively new in the past 2-3 years. This is a very new creature of law. So most theories are that if you are a citizen of the state, in other words, you live there, that's your residency, and you develop a domestic asset trust, it will protect you from creditors within that state only. Okay. So it's very limited. Are there opportunities to actually create that in another state and see if it'll work? Yes, but I think it might be a little bit of a waste of money for Washington citizens to start running to Utah or to Michigan or to other places and start developing these types of trusts. So Washington does not have it. However, with this new kind of push towards these domestic asset trusts, I'm watching to see if Washington will allow it. Washington is a rather creditor-friendly state, and so we are very slow to move in these types of directions. So I'm not very hopeful that it'll be coming out anytime soon.
Okay, looking at the power of protection, different questions about that subject this week on the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. People are intrigued by your services. How do they get in touch with you?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, there's upcoming educational opportunities, and also ways to communicate with us. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or if you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memoriesworthtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memoriesworthtelling.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show, this week with Paul Grant, looking at the power of protection, going through different questions about how trusts can protect you and those you love. And you mentioned the revocable trust, our first part of our segment today. Now we want to ask the question, what is an irrevocable trust?
Yes, now when we're talking about protection, we may have something that does the trick. So here, not only can we protect those, the beneficiaries, but we can also now begin to protect our own assets. But that's a little bit of a misnomer and a little bit of a sticky wicket as well, because an irrevocable trust, in its simplicity, is a trust that is designed that when you put assets into it, they are no longer under your control and you can no longer benefit from it. So it becomes – so irrevocable signifies that it can never be changed. Okay, so that's number one. Versus revocable means you can change it. Now, we could set up an irrevocable trust with unchangeable wording and unchangeable directives – and you still be in control of it. But that would not accomplish the protection piece because you still control the trust. So
Why would anybody want something that they don't control?
Well, there's many reasons. There's many good reasons of why someone would create an irrevocable trust. So that's a great question. So number one, if someone has sufficient wealth and they're going to be under a taxing scheme, it is a way to remove assets from your estate and make a gift to your beneficiaries immediately. Okay. You no longer control it. And so therefore that value is removed from your estate and therefore it won't be subject to taxation when you die.
So protection.
So it protects. How does it protect you? It protects against taxes, estate taxes. How else does it protect you? When you use an irrevocable trust. So there's assumptions here when I use the term irrevocable. Number one is that the terms of the trust are not changeable. And number two, you, the creator of this irrevocable trust, no longer manage or control the asset, and you cannot benefit from it. So if you put $1 million into a trust and we've made a determination that that is your best strategy or that is the best way for you to go about it for tax purposes, then you can never benefit from that money again, which means you have other money to protect you and make sure that your life is going to be sustained in a way that you can enjoy life and make sure that you're financially and emotionally stable. So the irrevocable trust then is a way to remove things. And when that happens, because it's no longer yours, if you were in that car accident, Now, that money that you put into the irrevocable trust, because it's not in your control, you can't benefit from it, then a creditor could never attack that. Now, when a trust is also properly set up, an irrevocable trust should be able to protect the beneficiary. So let's say I set up an irrevocable trust for my girls, because I have two daughters. They're 24 and 25. And so let's say at a young age, I set up an irrevocable trust because I have excess finances that I want, or I want to cede something to them. The other issue is that they cannot control it. Otherwise, if they controlled the trust, then the same principle applies, which is if they were in an accident or if they had a credit or if they went through a divorce, now because they manage and control the finances, there is a risk that that money could then be subject to their creditors. And I just broke one of the greatest protection schemes, mm-hmm. which is that, okay, I'm protected, but now I blew it that my girls are no longer protected because I gave them too much power and authority. So when we use an irrevocable trust, there is a strong balance between these two concepts of what is the purpose behind it? Is it a tax purpose? Is it for Medicaid? That would be another reason that we start an irrevocable trust, is that there's oftentimes Medicaid reasons that we need to move assets away from us so that we can qualify for state assistance. Oftentimes that could be done with a home. So there's many reasons why an irrevocable trust could be a strong tool to use, or actually in business succession. So if I had a strong business and I wanted to start making my girls partners, that's another really strong reason to use an irrevocable trust. So all these things, but they must be designed. An irrevocable trust is nothing to be played with lightly.
Yeah, you say it can never be changed.
Well, there's always tools and tricks because okay. I'm an attorney, okay. So I'm still a little bit sneaky. All right. But because it is irrevocable, it takes... You need to make sure you have the right attorney guide you through these steps to ensure that it's actually going to operate long-term and generationally in the way that you envision it. So there you go. There's a difference between revocable and irrevocable. And we're talking about protections today. How do we protect our family? Because that's the nature of God. He is a protector and a keeper. So therefore, a revocable trust is great for estate planning. It doesn't help you be protected. An irrevocable trust is you've given the money away, so you can protect you and you can also protect your beneficiaries. So therefore, how does a revocable trust even protect your assets? Yeah, it doesn't. But what it does do is it sets up your beneficiaries with potential protection. So what do I mean by that? So if someone passes away, then that trust to that person becomes irrevocable, because I know this next statement was worth you chiming into this radio station. But when someone dies, I can no longer get their signature. I told you it was just phenomenal revelation right there. Right. Now, why is that important? Because if I have a revocable living trust and I've used that tool as an estate planning mechanism, during my lifetime, I can continue to sign my name and make adjustments through it. That's the power of having a revocable trust, is I get to watch life. If taxes change, legal things change, if something happens in my girl's life or my finances, I can make fine-tuned adjustments through my life with a revocable living trust. But when I die, now I can't sign anything anymore. So therefore, a revocable trust is turned into an irrevocable trust. Now, we just talked about some of the characteristics of an irrevocable trust. So what's the characteristic of an irrevocable trust? When it's properly designed, and I want to emphasize that, you need to find the right attorney who will help you through these types of processes to make sure that your family goals are really met in the long run, is that when it is properly designed, then it turns into irrevocable when I die, and now my girls can be afforded the protections against their creditors, against potential divorces and a myriad of other things. So it doesn't protect me during my lifetime, but it is a setup to assist and protect my family long-term and even generationally when a revocable living trust is properly designed. And that, by the way, is one of the stronger reasons that I utilize trusts as a primary tool in my practice to do estate planning instead of wills. Wills are simply a check-writing instrument. When you die, money goes to someone, but it goes back to their hands. And so we've perpetuated this lack of security. We've lost the opportunity to protect those that we love. But when we use a trust format and we move assets into a trust, now it starts as from a revocable into an irrevocable. Mm-hmm. And what I believe is that that is a greater reflection of our God. And I'll just remind us, I'll leave with this as well. 2 Samuel 22, that my God is my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and my horn of salvation. So therefore, God is our protector. And my encouragement is that we need to take steps in our estate plan that reflect that nature and that characteristic of God. He protects us, and so therefore, I want to protect my family.
Okay, looking at the power of protection this week on the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. People are intrigued by your approach to these subjects, and they want more help. How do they find out more about you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com, past podcasts, ways to communicate with us, upcoming educational opportunities, legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, always great stuff. Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant here on KCIS.